This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bugosity. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's audibletrial.com/bugosity. Welcome to the Bugosity Podcast for the 9th of May 2016, the podcast that sees a little silhouette of a man. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again is Travis Retriever. Travis, welcome back to the show.
Bark.
Let's adjudicate the news of the bogus. And we've covered vaping and all of the stories about bureaucratic busybodies wanting to ban it because it's like smoking, sorta. And we've covered all the reasons why it's bogus, so it's heartening to see the UK's Royal College of Physicians, one of the most prestigious medical groups on the planet, come out in favor of vaping as being a life-saving alternative to smoking tobacco. So according to their report, quote, "Large-scale substitution of e-cigarettes or other non-tobacco nicotine products for tobacco smoking has the potential to prevent almost all the harm from smoking in society. Promoting e-cigarettes as widely as possible as a substitute for smoking is therefore likely to generate significant health gains in the UK."
I legitimately don't get the e-cigarette hate at all. And I see this as a complete non-smoker and a complete outsider to this whole deal.
Me too.
Like, okay, we know the regular cigarettes are bad because in addition to the nicotine, they also have something like over 1,000 substances that are bad for you in them, like carbon monoxide, cyanide, and tar, and so forth. But last I checked, e-cigs are just water and water vapor, nicotine, and some flavoring to give it a pleasant smell.
Yeah, and they'll usually use something like propylene glycol to help it evaporate, things like that.
Yeah.
But generally safe ingredients.
But chemicals! It must be worse than all the others in the cigarettes combined! We haven't studied... Oh, yeah, no, seriously, piss off.
Yeah, we've talked about the food babe kind of things with that before, yeah.
Yeah, and the anti-vaxxer logic of, well, we haven't studied it extensively, even though by their own logic they kind of have, if you count all the substances in the cigarettes they've studied, and these are just fewer of those, ergo, I mean, simple logic, really.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a subset of the ingredients in tobacco, then it stands to reason, at the very least, it can't be more dangerous than tobacco, and they just sell tobacco in stores to people.
No kidding. Yeah, this is not even going into the people who, as they point out, have actually quit smoking using e-cigs.
Yeah, it's at least as good as other smoking cessation products, and even better, possibly.
Apparently, they're less of a fire hazard, too, since people aren't going to chuck out their e-cig thingamabobber and have it start a fire.
Well, a lot of house fires have started because someone was smoking in bed and fell asleep.
Exactly. But it sounds like that's something that pretty much won't be happening if they say we're an e-cig use.
So the RCP said, quote, "E-cigarette vapor contains a far less extensive range of toxins, and those present are typically at much lower levels than in tobacco smoke. In normal conditions of use, toxin levels in inhaled e-cigarette vapor are probably well below prescribed threshold limit values for occupational exposure, in which case significant long-term harm is unlikely. Although it is not possible to quantify the long-term health risks associated with e-cigarettes precisely, the available data suggests that they are unlikely to exceed 5% of those associated with smoked tobacco products and may well be substantially lower than this figure."
So, worst case scenario, they're about 5% as dangerous as regular cigarettes. Maybe.
Yeah.
And could very easily be much less dangerous.
Yeah, and that matches what a 2015 report from Public Health England said, quote, "It has previously been estimated that e-cigarettes are around 95% safer than smoking. That appears to remain a reasonable estimate."
Pretty simple and logical, if you ask me. I don't see what the all the hullabaloo is. Yeah, this e-cigging stuff, it strikes me as a bit, you know, hipsterish and douchey, but then I'm not such a myopic prick and busybody that I would find that enough reason to shun or even want to ban or initiate force against peaceful people who are using them.
Well, if nothing else, why would you want to do anything to discourage tobacco smokers from switching to it?
Especially considering how effective it is at getting people to quit the habit in its entirety.
And the RCP specifically said that if regulation, quote, makes e-cigarettes less easily accessible, less palatable or acceptable, more expensive, less consumer-friendly, or pharmacologically less effective, or inhibits innovation and development of new and improved products, then it causes harm by perpetuating smoking.
Outright shameful. But, you know, without government, who would protect us from the wicked capitalists, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, and they went on to say what you were saying earlier about how they surpassed nicotine replacement therapy. Quote, the average quit rate in all smokers using SSS was around 51%, and among e-cigarette users, it was 66%. Although factors other than the product itself are likely to be involved in this difference, the finding is certainly consistent with high efficacy as a cessation therapy. And they also said, quote, smokers who use e-cigarettes at least daily are indeed twice as likely to make a quit attempt or else to reduce their smoking as those who do not. Independent clinical trials and observational data from the Smoking Toolkit study indicate that e-cigarette use is associated with an increased chance of quitting successfully.
After that, they also get on to probably the biggest argument against e-cigs, the whole, well, it's a gateway drug. Gateway drug, it's like, give me a break.
Yeah, there's no evidence that people start vaping and then move on to tobacco.
Yeah, but it's a slippery slope, like, you see, because first they're using the e-cigging, then they use regular cigs, and then the next thing you know, they're on the Jersey Turnpikes turning hand jobs for their next smack of heroin, man.
Yeah. Well, the argument is that if we accept e-cigarettes, that will renormalize smoking, and the RCP says, quote, there is no evidence that either NRT or e-cigarette use has resulted in renormalization of smoking. None of these products has to date attracted significant use among adult never smokers or demonstrated evidence of significant gateway progression into smoking among young people. E-cigarette use in Britain is, to date, almost entirely restricted to current, past or experimental smokers. There is no evidence thus far that e-cigarette use has resulted to any appreciable extent in the initiation of smoking in either adults or children, which is something else they like to do. Won't you think of the children?
During the 1920s, during Prohibition, well, alcohol prohibition, in order to discourage people from drinking, the government, and to the people who would, this is not conspiracy, you can look it up yourself if you don't believe me, they actually have been documented as trying to actually deliberately poison the alcohol that was in use there. I can't remember the exact figures, but I want to say it was like, what, 10,000 deaths or something like that, or some other horrifying thing.
There was something a few years ago that they were trying that with, I think it was hand sanitizer. They wanted them to put a toxic substance in there because people were apparently boiling it down to alcohol and drinking it. It's like, yeah, that's a great way to protect alcoholics, isn't it, by poisoning what they're drinking?
It's why I always laugh hard when I hear people say, yeah, well, let's just make murder legal, herder. Okay, even completely ignoring all of that stuff, in the 20th century alone, GovCo murdered over 260 million people, not including war or capital punishment. Number of private murders in that time was less than 9 million. So even if completely abolishing and completely getting rid of GovCo and the quote-unquote power vacuum, an argument long dismissed, but even if that were to cause a tripling of the murder rate, then the private murder rate would still be more than two orders of magnitude less than what government does. Moral of the story, if you really care about safety and reducing death and murder rates, then the last people you should be going to would be government, if this stuff, and indeed the other stuff we've discussed here, is any indicator.
Well, not only that, it's a completely different comparison in kind. I mean, here we're talking about something that people do to themselves because they enjoy it, which may cause problems down the line, as opposed to direct harm done against someone else who wasn't at all willing.
Yeah.
So, according to John Britton, chairman of the RCP's Tobacco Advisory Group, quote, the growing use of electronic cigarettes as a substitute for tobacco smoking has been a topic of great controversy, with much speculation over their potential risks and benefits. This report lays to rest almost all of the concerns over these products and concludes that, with sensible regulation, electronic cigarettes have the potential to make a major contribution towards preventing the premature death, disease, and social inequalities in health that smoking currently causes in the UK. Smokers should be reassured that these products can help them quit all tobacco use forever.
Which will almost certainly have massive health benefits for them and financial as well.
Yep. But sadly, soon after this, the FDA showed once again that it's more about control and social engineering than science. They're now going to regulate e-cigarettes just like tobacco cigarettes.
Bloody hell.
So, according to Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell, quote, "Millions of kids are being introduced to nicotine every year, a new generation hooked on a highly addictive chemical. We cannot let the enormous progress we've made toward a tobacco-free generation be undermined by products that impact our health and economy in this way." Gotta love that word, impact.
Yeah.
It makes it sound violent.
And I think, okay, here's what they really mean by economy. For those who don't talk in newspeak, they're basically butthurt because they don't have the massive amount of tax and other such control and revenue over it that they do with regular cigarettes. That's what this is about. It's all about control here.
But notice that she's worded this so that she's implying that the e-cigarettes are involved without actually stating it, because she knows it's wrong. And so when people come at her and challenge her and say, "Well, I didn't actually say that."
Oh, God. Gotta love that cowardly stuff. It's kind of like the conspiracy theorists will say, "I'm just asking questions. Are we not allowed to ask questions?" It's like, "Oh, you bloody coward."
So this ABC article, and I'm definitely going to be throwing brickbats at ABC here, quote, "They lack the e-cigarettes, lack the chemicals and tars of burning tobacco, but the cigarettes have not been extensively studied."
It's like, bro, or sis, or whatever, do you even logic?
"And there's no scientific consensus on the risks or advantages of vaping. We just went over the scientific consensus."
Lest anyone just say, "Oh, well, it's Fox News," or, "Oh, well, their industry." No, this was a legit source.
Yeah, check out this next one, quote, "More than 15% of high school students report using e-cigarettes, up more than 900% over the last 5 years. Yeah, and iPhone 6 sales are up 10,000 zillion percent from what they were in mid-2014. Oh, really? You're telling me it's a lot higher than it was in a period where not as many people knew about them and they weren't as readily available? Gee!
Yeah, exactly. And how does that compare to the people and the teenagers who were actually smoking regular tobacco?
And how many of those 900% whatever, that 15%, are people who either were smoking before and switched to vapes, or who would have been smoking cigarettes had it not been for the vapes?
Exactly. And this, boys and girls, is what we call an over 9,000 fallacy.
Yeah. So FDA Commissioner Dr. Robert Califf said, quote, "With this rule, the FDA will be able to prevent misleading claims and provide consumers with information to help them better understand the risks." You're the one spreading the misinformation!
Talk about having the fox guard the hen house.
And they even say in this ABC article, quote, "Some smokers say they use e-cigarettes as a way to quit smoking tobacco or to cut down. However, there's not much scientific evidence supporting those claims."
We just went
Except for what?
We just went over it. And also, you gotta love how they make it sound like it's just a few scattered anecdotes and not actual data.
Yeah.
Well, some say, yeah, gotta love these weasel words.
Well, that's the thing about this article. They didn't even try to interview independent experts for this story. The only opposing viewpoints they gave were from the e-cigarette companies and from Republican politicians, which their readership is just going to write off as biased. And yet, all the parts I've quoted out with the misinformation, they don't even hedge it with, like, "according to some scientists" or whatever. They just present it as scientific fact, even though it's long debunked misinformation. And lots of independent experts could have told them how ridiculous all of that is.
I'm just aghast at this, really. I mean, they're trying to paint it like it's the evil capitalists and GovCo, read them, protecting us on a white horse. Can they get any more transparent?
Yeah, they're depicting them like these mustache-twirling villains from the silent films.
What? Yes, I will kill them with my products, even though that will annihilate me financially. But I'll still do it because I'm evil.
Mm-hmm. Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
So back in January, we covered Brazil forcing WhatsApp to close down for 72 hours because they refused to help a Brazilian court decrypt WhatsApp transmissions. Just like they refused to fly around the room by flapping their arms and refused to make 2 plus 2 equal 5.
But Shane, we can't be absolutists with this stuff.
Yeah, I know, we're fetishizing our phones.
Yeah.
But an appellate court reversed it and WhatsApp got turned back on for Brazilians, but now it's happening again. And from the same judge. So this was a ruling on April 26th that became public on Monday. It took effect that Monday at 2 p.m. local time, which is 1 p.m. Eastern. And people in Brazil who used WhatsApp, which is something like 91% of Brazilian mobile users, like 100 million people, they couldn't connect. They couldn't send or receive any messages. They couldn't use WhatsApp to communicate with anyone. And if the service providers didn't go along with the ban, they were fined 500,000 reais, I think is how it's pronounced, per day, which is about $142,000. Also, apparently, not for nothing, but unrelated, apparently PQP is Portuguese for WTF.
PQP?
PQP. I don't know what it stands for, but apparently it's WTF. But as the New York Times points out, the reason why so many people use WhatsApp is because the Brazilian telecom providers have really jacked up the price of calls and texts. And WhatsApp goes over data, so it's a lot cheaper to use. But then it gets cut off and they're left with these more expensive alternatives.
So what I'm getting from this, telco and other such, cronyism is as alive there as it is here.
Oh, if not much worse.
Oh, God. Oh.
Now, this time it was down for just over a day before the appellate court ordered it back online, but they do have a new cybercrime bill that's on the verge of being enacted, according to this Intercept article, which would codify these shutdown powers to where they could do it anytime they want to. And according to Ronaldo Lemos, founding director of the Institute for Technology and Society of Rio de Janeiro, quote, "Tomorrow, the cybercrime CPI will vote on a proposal to make this type of block lawful. If the CPI proposal goes forward, this will be the new normal in the country. Every week we would have news of sites and services that are blocked, as it is in Saudi Arabia and North Korea."
Oh boy.
And I mean, even without that, it's apparently disturbing that even if this horrible bill doesn't pass, not only can Brazil still cut off service for an app for everyone in the entire country for a limited amount of time, it can be done on the say-so of a single judge. And I think that's really the point here. If they can't win legally, then they're just going to do it this way and keep harassing the providers and make life difficult for them just to make it not worth their while to provide it anymore.
It's like we've said before, government is not rule of law. This is rule of men.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now.
Of course, a big reason for the popular demand for secure end-to-end encryption is the revelations from Edward Snowden, who's still living in exile in Russia, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz, and pretty much every Democrat and Republican is whining that he should have gone through proper channels. The problem is...
they're a joke.
There are no proper channels. The system designed for whistleblowers is really just a way to find out who they are and get them out of the way, and things still haven't changed in that regard. In fact, the Obama administration has prosecuted more whistleblowers than all of the other administrations combined.
Adding to this, if I recall correctly, I know Trump, you pointed out that Trump wants to actually have Snowden executed, and it sounds like some of the other folks, it sounds like they want the same thing too, albeit they're a bit more subtle about it, because it sounds like that's basically what would end up happening if he went through the quote-unquote proper channels.
Or at least stuck down in Guantanamo or somewhere.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but as far as I'm concerned, anyone therefore claiming that they're libertarian and support Bernie or Trump is therefore a bloody liar.
So this is a story from foreignpolicy.com about a whistleblower, Elam Khorasani, which is not her real name. I don't know why they would make up a name that's as hard for me to pronounce as that. They hate me, but... she's apparently a native of Iran and a U.S. citizen since the 1990s. And she figured out something was wrong when the FBI raided her house. She was out driving around and got a phone call from the FBI agent saying that he was already in her house and they were conducting a search.
Oh, dear.
And she says, quote, "They suspended my clearances without giving me any reason." And she said she wasn't allowed at work. And for 2 years, the NSA made her, quote, "call every day like a criminal, checking in every morning before 8. And she went there only for interrogations, 8 or 9 sessions of at least 5 hours each, where she was asked about her family, her travel, and her contacts.
Well, heart goes out to her then. That is absolutely horrible.
And the impetus for all this was apparently a meeting with Thomas Drake, who's another whistleblower that the Obama administration has prosecuted, trying to follow through with a complaint about what she felt was an unfair reassignment. And Drake told her, quote, "You've already got the bullseye on you. You're done." And apparently once they set their sights on you, that's it. And I mean, that's something they say, oh, well, Snowden fled the country first before revealing it. Well, that was the only way he could do it. Because he talked to a lot of other people in the NSA privately about what's the best way to do it. And they all told him this. It's like, look, the only way you're going to get this done is if you get out of here, go to Hong Kong or somewhere, and tell the press from there.
Pretty much.
Well, the process for whistleblowers is pretty much exactly the same as the process for dealing with insider threats. And whenever legislators like Senator Chuck Grassley try to come out with legislation giving better protection for whistleblowers, the Obama administration and the FBI and the DOJ, they all fight it.
Yeah.
Because like you have Attorney General Loretta Lynch saying that permitting FBI agents to report crimes or ways through their chain of command would risk exposing their intelligence programs. Quote, "What I would say is that as we work through this issue, please know that, again, any concerns that the department raises are not out of a disagreement with the point of view of the protection of whistleblowers, but again, just making sure that the FBI's intelligence are also protected at the same time."
Funny how I don't believe her.
Yeah. I mean, they talk about all the secrets that Snowden exposed. The only secrets he exposed were how they were breaking the law and screwing us over.
Yeah.
So Grassley responded to her, quote, "One of the issues that your department has raised is that allowing FBI employees to report wrongdoing to their chain of command could lead to too many complaints. You know what? What's wrong with too many complaints? Seems to me you'd invite every wrongdoing to get reported to somebody so it could get corrected. This is the FBI, not only a bureau that has tremendous power over people, but also one with a well-documented history of abuse. It should be the first entity that has whistleblower protection, not the last."
Figures. And to anyone saying, well, this is not the president's fault, he could just simply use an executive order to say, hey, knock this crap off. It would only take about 5, maybe 10 minutes for him to do that, yet he refuses to.
If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP?
A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age. So go to vpn.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world. And they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.bogosity.tv. And now it's time to, I don't even know what, with this week's biggest bogon emitter.
Oh, jeez.
Really, this is a bizarre one. Prepare yourselves.
I'm going to be honest here. I don't even understand any of this stuff.
Well,
I'm afraid to even read it.
Your first clue should be that my link to this week's recipient, Dr. Craig Wright, is on the Bogus Archive. We'll talk about why in a few minutes.
Oh, boy.
But for now, let's do the story as I was initially wanting to do it before weirdness happened.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, back in December, Wired and Gizmodo published that Wright might be Satoshi Nakamoto, yet another in a long line of people who are obviously Satoshi Nakamoto. And I'm talking about, of course, the anonymous and enigmatic creator of Bitcoin. And it ended up being an elaborate hoax, apparently from Wright himself, who was apparently just trying to get attention or cred or something so that I don't even know what, make money or whatever. So anyway, the whole thing was a hoax, but that didn't stop Wright's home from being raided by the Australian Federal Police. The whole thing was bogosity. They didn't find anything. But in the ensuing months, Wright started getting all this credibility from people who thought it might be true. So on May the 2nd, he came out and claimed to be the real Satoshi Nakamoto. And this post on the Bogus Archive is the original blog post. We'll go over it and everything that's wrong with it, starting with the title, which is something we've said a number of times. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. The problem is he doesn't really understand what this means. This is an expression of the Bayesian concept of prior probability. Extraordinary claims are ones with a low prior probability. The proof or the evidence is evaluated by the likelihood ratio, which is where you look at a piece of evidence and you say, okay, what are the chances we would see this evidence if the hypothesis were true, and divide it by the chances we would see this evidence if the hypothesis were false. And extraordinary proof or extraordinary evidence means that that's so lopsided that that ends up being a really big number and brings up the priors to something realistic. But he completely misunderstands this, as we'll see. He says, quote, I cannot deny that my interest in bringing the origins of Bitcoin into the light is ultimately and undeniably a selfish one. Gee, you don't say. In the wake of the articles last December in which I was outed, I still believed that I could remain silent. I still believed that I could retreat into anonymity, sever contact, go quiet, and the storm would eventually pass and life would return to normal. The story did eventually retreat, but not before it turned and the allegations of fraud and hoax clung to me. I know now that I can never go back, so I must go through to go forward. So here's where we find out that he doesn't really understand extraordinary evidence. I can prove access to the early keys, and I can and will do so by moving Bitcoin, but this should be a necessary but not sufficient condition for such an extraordinary claim. No, that's sufficient! That's it! If you can prove that you have Satoshi's Bitcoins, that's pretty much proof that you are Satoshi, because only Satoshi can do that.
No kidding. Bro, do you even Bayesian?
Well, and this is something that the real Satoshi would know, so...
Yeah.
But apparently he wanted to speak with Gavin Andreessen. We've talked about this before. He's the guy who Satoshi handed over the reins to once before he went dark and went out of the way. And so Andreessen's been the one who's basically been in charge of Bitcoin since then. So he said, quote, simply signing messages or moving Bitcoin would never be enough for Gavin, and it should not be enough for anyone else. Yes, it should. So over the coming days, I'll be posting a series of pieces that will lay the foundations for this extraordinary claim, posting independently verifiable documents and evidence addressing some of the false allegations that have been leveled and transferring Bitcoin from an early block. For some, there is no burden of proof high enough, no evidence that cannot be dismissed as fabrication or manipulation. You should be skeptical. You should question. I would. I will present what I believe to be extraordinary proof and ask only that it be independently validated. Ultimately, I can do no more than that. Is this sounding like one of those conspiracy nut jobs to you?
Yeah. At the very least, I could smell his desperation from here.
So, yeah, apparently that meeting with Andreessen happened, as Wired.com reports, and Andreessen came out of it convinced that Wright is Nakamoto. He had this private meeting where, apparently, this is just really bizarre. I don't even understand why Andreessen would be convinced by this, but it sounds like he just had a piece of text and gave him a signature and said, this proves that it's me. And we'll go over this, but I don't really get how this convinced him. But Andreessen said, quote, "This is a person who knows an awful lot about Bitcoin and an awful lot about early Bitcoin stuff. The email conversations I had sounded like Satoshi to me. It sounded like I was talking to the same person I'd worked with way back when. That convinced me to get on an airplane." So, now, I mean, that sounds like a typical con artist, right?
God. Great.
So, Andreessen visited with him and saw Wright perform this amazing cryptographic feat that erased all doubt. Now, there are two ways that you could do this. One, as I said, is just moving Bitcoin from an early block. And the really convincing way to do that would be to say, have Andreessen come up with a random three-digit number, use a random number generator, say it's like 316 or something like that, and then move that many Satoshi from, you know, a Satoshi being, what is it, 1/10 billionth of a Bitcoin or 10 millionth or something like that. Really tiny amounts, but the Satoshi is the smallest unit that you can transfer. And so he would just transfer that number, 316, I think I said, Satoshi, from one of Satoshi Nakamoto's Bitcoin blocks into Gavin Andreessen's address. That should be enough. Another way, which is a lot easier and a lot more straightforward and a lot more easy to verify, is to simply sign a message cryptographically. Now, we've talked before about signing. This is where you have a private key and a public key. You sign a message with a private key, and anyone who has the public key can verify it. Now, a Bitcoin address, contrary to what a lot of people say, it's not a public key. It's a hash of a public key. But as long as there's at least one transaction in the blockchain with that address, then you can look at that transaction and get the corresponding public key. And so all he really needs to do, because there are transactions from the real Satoshi in the blockchain, all he has to do is sign something using Satoshi's private key and then publish it, and then anyone can verify it. You don't need Andreessen. You don't need him to get on a plane or anything.
I would think. I mean, that seems like a bit much.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what a con does. It makes this overly elaborate show. So Andreessen says, quote, "It's certainly possible I was bamboozled. I could spin stories of how they hacked the hotel Wi-Fi so that the insecure connection gave us a bad version of the software, but that just seems incredibly unlikely. It seems that the simpler explanation is that this person is Satoshi." Well, it took about 3 seconds for experts to point out problems with this, like security researcher Dan Kaminsky, who said, quote, "The procedure that's supposed to prove Dr. Wright is Satoshi is aggressively, but almost but not quite maliciously resistant to actual validation." And after a little more analysis, he said, okay, yes, this is intentional scammery. So what happened was, and why Jean-Paul Sartre, I don't know, but for some reason there was a little bit of a blurb from Sartre, and then Wright published this blog post saying that, okay, I've cryptographically signed this, here's the signature. But, I mean, it didn't take Kaminsky and others long to figure out that the signed message didn't even associate with the Sartre text, but was a transaction from Nakamoto back in 2009.
Oh boy.
Which you could have just looked up on the blockchain. I mean, you could have just Googled it.
Or at the very least, ask one of your tech-savvy friends what the hell is going on here.
But Andreessen is tech-savvy. That's what gets me.
Oh my god.
He's in charge of Bitcoin. This guy knows what he's doing.
You're shitting me.
So Patrick McKenzie said, quote, Wright's post is flimflam and hokum, which stands up to a few minutes of cursory scrutiny. It demonstrates a competent sysadmin's level of familiarity with cryptographic tools, but ultimately demonstrates no non-public information about Satoshi. But for the endorsement of core developer Gavin Andreessen, I would assume that Wright used amateur magician tactics to distract non-technical or non-expert staff of the BBC and The Economist, and those were the two big outlets that were just completely bamboozled by this, during a stage-managed demonstration. I'm mystified as to how this got past Andreessen. And also, Robert Graham of Errata Security, we've mentioned him a couple of times before.
And I love this summary. I hate to skip to the end here, but I'm just that kind of jerk. Summary, Occam's razor is that Andreessen was tricked. There's no reason for him to fly to London otherwise. They could have just sent him an email with a message, a signature, and an address, and Andreessen could have verified it himself.
And he actually goes over the instructions. He's using the Electrum Bitcoin wallet software. And what you do is you have it loaded up with your Bitcoin wallet. And so you select what address you want to use, and then you type in the message, and instead of using SATA, he actually put in, Robert Graham is Satoshi Nakamoto. I mean, that's what he had to do. He could have typed in, I, Craig Wright, am Satoshi Nakamoto, and I created Bitcoin, instead of pulling out whatever text from wherever. Hit sign, and then you've got the signature, and then anyone else in the world can verify it. You just put in the message, put in the address, hit verify.
So basically a lot simpler, a lot less crap, no flight.
Yeah.
Or TSA BS with that. Yeah, just something I could probably do from my own computer, given the right instruction, as unsavvy with this as even I am.
Yeah, and you can check it in an hour. You can check, you know, I mean, just an hour it would have taken for people to check this. And what Graham did, of course, he's not Satoshi, so he didn't have access to any of Satoshi's, but he used one of his Bitcoin addresses. You can verify that it was actually Robert Graham who did that just, you know, I mean, in a few minutes.
Jeez.
And he said, quote, if you had reason to believe this address belonged to Satoshi Nakamoto, such as if it had been in the first blocks, then I would have just proven to you that I am indeed Satoshi. You wouldn't need to take anybody's word for it. You'd simply type in the fields or copy-paste, hit verify, and verify for yourself.
Simple as it gets now.
And he also pointed a much more detailed and technical article, which I won't go through because we don't need to get that technical, and I'm even just going to even more summarize it now that the subsequent weirdness has happened, which we haven't even gotten to the weirdness yet. So what happened was the SATRA file was hashed twice by SHA-256, and then the hash was encrypted. That's exactly how Bitcoin transactions are hashed. And so what he did was he grabbed a transaction from the real Satoshi and he grabbed the initial hash and then claimed that the SATRA file had that same hash. And then when you check it, it hashes again and it matches. But it matches not because it matches the SATRA file, but because it matches that block that he grabbed it from. And he says, quote, that's a lie. How are we supposed to know? After all, we aren't going to type in a bunch of hex digits, then go search the blockchain for those bytes. We didn't have a copy of the SATRA file to calculate the hash ourselves. Now, when hashed and signed, the results from OpenSSL exactly match the results from that old Bitcoin transaction. Craig Wright magically appears to have proven he knows Satoshi's private key when, in fact, he's copied the inputs and outputs and made us think he calculated them. It would have worked too, but there's too many damn experts in the blockchain who immediately pick up on the subtle details. There's too many people willing to type in all those characters. Once typed in, it's a simple matter of Googling them to find them in the blockchain.
Okay, when you're doing something that can be, like, basically shown otherwise via a simple Google search, that's when you know something has gone horribly wrong.
And that's also why I like this one tweet from Steve Gibson of Gibson Research, quote, I sure hope this clown is not Satoshi.
Oh, God! Definitely link to that tweet. Oh, my God.
Oh, okay, I will.
Oh, my God. I gotta see this.
And Andreessen's kind of pulled a disappearing act. I think he's a little embarrassed, but soon after he posted his confirmation, he tweeted something like, let the anomaly hunting begin. But this isn't anomaly hunting. This is just outright fraud.
No kidding.
So looking through all of that is when I saw the weirdness. I noticed that Wright's blog post wasn't loading for me, It wouldn't load in Chrome, wouldn't load in Firefox. Fortunately, there was a copy on the Wayback Machine, so I grabbed it for the archive in case he pulls a food babe and has that taken down too. But his entire website has been replaced with a single page. I have a screenshot of it in case it gets taken down too. And he says, quote, and this is Craig Wright, "I'm sorry. I believed that I could do this. I believed that I could put the years of anonymity and hiding behind me. But as the events of this week unfolded and I prepared to publish the proof of access to the earliest keys, I broke. I do not have the courage. I cannot."
Oh, God. You con artist.
"When the rumors began, my qualifications and character were attacked. When those allegations were proven false, new allegations have already begun. I know now that I am not strong enough for this."
He sounds like Anita Sarkeesian. I'm getting, is
no.
This one? Okay, legit question. In your experience dealing with stuff like this, would you say that whining about how you were attacked or how they said mean stuff, is that like a red flag, or if not even a Bayesian indicator or something, that someone is full of crap?
Definite red flag. Definite red flag.
Got it. I should have known.
I mean, especially considering that he could have published the proof and had it confirmed worldwide in an hour.
I mean, come on. It's like, yeah. He sounds like Anita Sarkeesian or Food Babe or someone. Good Lord.
So he concludes, quote, "I know that this weakness will cause great damage to those who have supported me, and particularly to John Matonis and Gavin Andreessen. I can only hope that their honor and credibility is not irreparably tainted by my actions. They were not deceived, but I know that the world will never believe that now. I can only say I'm sorry and goodbye."
Gods. For those who are still complete state cultists and don't realize, this is why we don't take your claim seriously. When you whine about us being meanies to you. And
yeah,
I mean, it was actually, I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt of all people who said it best. Great minds discuss ideas, small minds discuss people.
Yeah, there was a third one in there. I don't remember what it was, but yeah.
Yeah, it was average minds discuss events.
Average minds discuss, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think it's actually a good thing that we don't have a clue who Satoshi is, because as long as he's this mysterious figure, then Bitcoin will be able to succeed or fail on its own merits. But as soon as we figure out who he is, you know people are going to be trying to attack him left and right, like they tried to attack Edward Snowden and impugn his knowledge and abilities after his revelations first came out. It's hard to do an ad hominem attack when you don't have a homonym, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the story of how Craig Wright cranked it up to 11 as this week's biggest bogon emitter. Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. And now it's time to herniate this week's
Extraordinaire. Oh, look, it's Feinstein.
And I guess Senators Richard Burr and Dianne Feinstein didn't want the presidential candidates getting all the attention, so they introduced legislation that is far stupider than anything any of the presidential candidates have said so far. By the way, this is Feinstein's fourth time.
So
I guess she's going for a Lifetime Achievement Award as well.
Oh my God.
So this is the Compliant with Court Orders Act of 2016, which requires all technology, software, and devices to have a way of decrypting any information for the government if they ask.
And with that, she officially went even greater levels of stupid than both Trump and Sanders combined.
And less than 24 hours after the draft was released, there were more than 43,000 signatures added to a petition calling for it to be withdrawn.
Good.
And Bruce Schneier, we've talked about him before, he told the Register, quote, This is the most brain-dead piece of legislation I've ever seen. The person who wrote this either has no idea how technology works or just doesn't care. Or maybe both. How about both, Bruce? Could be both.
Yeah.
But the point is, as Schneier points out, it's not just cryptographic code. The idea is they should be able to get things back to its original state without any loss of information. But what do you think JPEGs do? That's a lossy compression algorithm. There's no way to go from a JPEG back to the original picture with all the data intact. So it makes JPEGs illegal.
Oh my God.
And what about like information that you delete? Should there be a way to retrieve deleted information? You know, having to store a copy of it?
Speaking of, a reason I'm told it's good to recycle electronics, or at least destroy your hard drive before throwing your computer out, is because, and yes, this has happened, this isn't just idle speculation, mind, of hackers actually going to a dump or what have you, finding the intact hard drive, and pulling out or retrieving all that information. And yes, this has, of course, happened especially to poorly thrown out government files as well. Because these people are about as technologically illiterate as it gets, as this bill we're talking about now demonstrates.
Before you throw out any computer or hard drive or thumb drive or anything, before you throw it in the trash or discard it in any other way, get Derek's Boot and Nuke. That's D-A-R-I-K. Derek's Boot and Nuke. And that'll just go right onto a thumb drive and you boot from it. And it'll overwrite all of the sectors on that drive. And just completely wipe it out.
You might want to link to that as well.
Okay.
In the show notes. I would appreciate that much.
All right. So anyway, a lot of this is just stupid oversights that they could fix in the bill. But more fundamentally, even if we just limit this to encrypted transmissions, as Julian Sanchez points out, it would still effectively ban web browsers.
Oh, God.
Because this mandate applies to, quote, device manufacturers, software manufacturers, electronic communication services, remote communication services, providers of wire or electronic communication services, providers of remote communication services, or any person who provides a product or method to facilitate a communication or to process or store data. Any of those has to comply with a court order to give the unencrypted, fully restored data.
God,
so on demand.
It could pretty much easily ban things as far up as computer languages themselves that aren't binary. I mean, come on, I could easily see that happening, could you?
Well, I mean, yeah, if you compile it and don't keep the source code, there's no real way to go from the compiled binary back to the source. I mean, you can disassemble it, but you end up with this crazy source that's impossible to follow. So, I mean, there's no way to go back to the original program code.
And as you said before, this stuff is just math. I mean, what, are we going to outlaw and go nuts on math? What, should I be able to patent 2 plus 2 equals 4? I mean, this is just stupid, even by their own standards, and that's saying something.
But I mean, that's what happens anytime you go to somewhere like Amazon, Facebook, or even this justsecurity.org site, Julian Sanchez's site. You have HTTPS, and that's where you get that little green padlock, and more it's being used by default. You know, we've talked before about the EFF really wanting to push this through with their Let's Encrypt project. And we've also talked before about the idea of forward secrecy. And this is where you have your initial exchange using the public key from the server that's been verified by a trusted certificate authority. But then what happens is the server and the browser randomly create ephemeral keys and use those to encrypt the actual session. And what that means is that if the NSA records all of the transmissions, and then later on they go through and they ask the people who run the server, give us the server private key that goes along with that certificate, even with that, they still cannot decrypt it. There is no way to decrypt that transmission once it's over with. So, and I mean, this would mean that the Mozilla Foundation, who makes Firefox, they're responsible for the fact that government cannot decrypt these transmissions, even though they didn't play any role at all in the transaction.
So basically more stuff that would essentially qualify as basically having them be fined or punished for stuff that they in no way can be responsible for, and indeed in no way should be responsible for.
Yeah, and I like how he says, quote, "How then should developers redesign all these web browsers to comply with the law? The text of Feinstein-Burr doesn't say, 'Nerd harder, clever nerds, love will find a way, you'll figure something out.' But as soon as you start thinking about classes of possible solutions, it becomes clear that there are pretty huge problems with all of them." And he goes over them. I won't go over them in detail, but it's stuff like making that random number generator not so random. And we've talked before about how cryptography really needs quality random numbers, because that would make it easier to hack, but that would also make it easier for the hackers to get. Or you could redesign it so that there's an intermediary to every HTTPS section, like the problems we talked about with Lenovo a while back, when they stuck in their own intermediary to that. Or having the browser encrypt each session with the same key, which, you know, has the same problems.
Or, alternatively, GovCo can get the fuck out of this issue in its entirety and bugger off and let us to what little bit of a free market area we have.
And I mean, even if you could come up with some great solution, that solution's going to have vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Complexity is the enemy of security, and all this is doing is adding complexity.
No kidding. It's a lesson Steam could learn as well, I twitch.
And he also points out how this would basically make open source illegal. He says, quote, "If Feinstein-Burr becomes law, say goodbye to all that, at least when it comes to software that supports encryption of files or communications. The developer will have to customize the code to support their chosen government access mechanism, with the attendant risk of introducing vulnerabilities in the process, and then be prepared to secure the master key material for the effective life of the software. That, or run a server farm to act as a key repository and secure that." So just making it more and more difficult. So with all their bleeding about going dark, it's their policy that will push us back into the Dark Ages. So only Dianne Feinstein and Richard Burr could be this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this. I just want to see if my interocitor can withstand a sudden charge of 60,000 volts. Edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Come join the discussion at forum.bogosity.tv and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant in text or audio to podcast@bogosity.tv. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or the QR codes on the YouTube video. You can also become a patron at patreon.bogosity.tv and get the podcast and YouTube videos early and without ads or promos. Thank you for listening, and thanks to Travis Retriever for joining me.
It was fun, if a bit mentally exhausting, but good to see. Use it as an exercise in detecting BS and debunking it.
Until next time, here's a quote from Robert Lefevre. "Government, when it is examined, turns out to be nothing more nor less than a group of fallible men with a political force to act as though they were infallible." The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.
Bogosity.
Want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.